This is Fresh Air. I'm Artie Moscoane, in for Terry Gross. When filmmaker Philip Haas read A.S. Byatt's 1992 novella Morpho Eugenia, he knew immediately that it had cinematic possibilities. Set in Victorian England, it's the story of William Adamson, a naturalist who has spent many years doing research in the Amazon. On his way back to England, he is shipwrecked and loses almost all his specimens. One of his sponsors, Harold Alabaster, an amateur insect collector, invites him to live on his estate. Adamson is immediately entranced by Alabaster's daughter, Eugenia, whom he marries. But all is not what it seems in the Alabaster family. There are dark secrets beneath the outward civility, which are slowly revealed to Adamson. Philip Haas began his film career making documentaries about artists such as David Hockney, Richard Long, and Gilbert and George. He's collaborated with his wife, Belinda Haas, on documentaries and on their other feature film, The Music of Chance. Here's a scene from the beginning of Angels and Insects, when Adamson, played by Mark Rylance, has his first naive encounter with Eugenia Alabaster, played by Patsy Kensit, at a ball.
My father was so sorry to hear you had lost so much in the terrible shipwreck. For your sake, and for his own, he was eager to add to his collection.
Well, I did manage to save one or two of the rarest, most beautiful butterflies. I suppose there's a certain pathos in saving a dead butterfly. But one in particular, such a rarity. I say no more now, but I believe your father will be glad to have it. And you too. But it's to be a surprise, really.
I hate people who tell me I am to have a surprise and will not tell me what it is.
You don't like suspense?
No. No, I don't. I am afraid of surprises.
I must remember never to surprise you then.
What interested you about the story?
I was very much attracted to the visual possibilities in the story, the idea of comparing a Victorian house to an ant colony, and certain other visual things in the film or in the story were very attractive. The idea of our hero, William Adamson, wooing his bride by creating a cloud of butterflies to encircle her in the conservatory seemed to me that if we could pull it off in a film, would be a magical moment. Also, it had a very compelling storyline, and the denouement at the end seemed to me totally shocking. I mean, when I read it, I was felt like I'd been hit in the stomach, and I wanted to reproduce that in film. So it was really a combination of it being a visually exciting piece, a very dramatic one, and one that made me think about the story for a long time after I read it. And what I try and do in a film is to at once engage an audience and then hopefully let them not forget it.
Well, this is certainly another kind of view of Victorian life. This is not straight-laced and pure. Were you interested in really delving under and beneath and around the kind of structure of that society, the outward structure of that society?
Yes, very much. I mean, what appealed to me in the Byatt novella is that A.S. Byatt, or Antonia Byatt, is a contemporary writer. So she's looking at the 19th century through the lens of the 20th century, and that excited me enormously. I wanted to look at the Victorians in the same way that they were looking at the insects, and I didn't want to make a conventional costume piece. You know, I wanted to take it outside the museum and to, you know, bring our own point of view to a period which I think had been sort of glossed over and prettified in a lot of earlier films. I mean, this was sort of the film was almost made in opposition to the BBC type of costume drama that one has seen of late.
Well, I think it's certainly clear that this does not have the kind of historical correctness that you see in those kinds of BBC films where costumes and artifacts and hairstyles are perfect. I mean, they're right out of a museum. You play with a kind of surrealistic look.
Yeah, I mean, I wouldn't say that they're historically inaccurate. I mean, everything is based on history. It's just slightly skewered. So, for example, the hairstyle of the young girls in the film, we got out of photographs of hairstyles of dead Victorian children. I found the story quite sinister and perverse, and I wanted to accentuate that visually. So we did it by looking into the Victorian period and then taking what we found and slightly altering it.
Describe those hairstyles for us.
With the children, for example, it's just very, very severe and mannered, with little sort of odd curls masquerading for bangs. One of the things that we did with Eugenia, played by Patsy Kensit, is almost make her hair feel alive, so that as she gets fatter, it starts suffocating her. So the hair was as much a visual indication of what was going on in the story as the costumes.
Well, certainly the costumes are quite arresting. These are shimmering, bold colors. Working with your costume designer, what were you looking to tell, explore?
Well, one of the things that seemed to me very interesting was to make this parallel between the insect world and the human world. So we wanted the costumes to comment on the insect-like qualities of the characters. At the same time, researching the period costume-wise, one saw that the Victorians did have very strong dyes, and they were forever, you know, sewing sort of dead beetles onto their shawls. So we took all of this and then slightly altered it, slightly heightened it. I wanted it to have a kind of Alice through the Looking Glass feel. For example, with the small children who wore crinolines, you know, the undergarments to make their dresses blossom out. I just had the costume designer make them larger. So again, it's slightly, the scale is somewhat exaggerated. So you have this sinister feeling. I found the story very disturbing, and I wanted to disturb the audience visually too.
Well, I noticed too with shapes and with stripes as well that the stripes both enhanced the costumes of the dresses that people wore, but also constricted them at the same time. There was mm-hmm. this interesting tension going on even within the costumes.
Yes, I mean, this is a film about contradiction, you know, whether it's angels and insects or black and white or Victorian, you know, morality and sexuality. And, of course, you know, the Victorians were obsessed with sex, even though one tends to think of it as a sort of a contradiction in terms, Victorian sexuality. And one of the ways to show this kind of contradiction is you have these very constricting costumes and then very bold graphic sexual scenes as well. I think one of the things that's quite interesting in this piece, which deals with sexuality, is, as I've remarked, in a very graphic way, is that it's not gratuitous, because it is a film about ourselves as reproductive animals, as breeding machines. And it was important to, you know, make the sexuality come across in a very bold way and almost a sort of scientific way.
I'm interested, too, in how you approach the scenes where people were having sex. And I assume there are many traps that a filmmaker can fall into in trying to put sex on the scene. Going into them or even conceiving them, what were your thoughts?
Well, firstly, I wanted to make it visually interesting. That is, not to feel like sexual scenes that one has seen before. I mean, generally, in a movie, you'll see, you know, a man and a woman in a shower, you know,
right.
and it looks like a sort of an ad for soap, you know, with a bit of sort of Playboy magazine thrown in. What we had going for us here is the sexuality was very much a part of the story, so the actors didn't feel exploited in any way, and you know, they all wanted it to feel true to the story, and although this is not a pornographic movie, you know, we wanted their response to feel like a response that, you know, a couple would have behind closed doors.
I noticed many of those scenes were filmed through a kind of gauzy curtain that hangs around Eugenia's bed.
Well, one of the things that we did I think it's in one scene in particular that you get this sort of shot through the gauze effect, and it's on their wedding night. One, the gauze gave it a kind of soft, romantic feel, and then it was punctuated with shots inside the gauze, which were much more graphic and harsh. And I wanted to play on that, these two things of romance and softness coupled by, you know, sexual rigor. And one of the things that's surprising in the story is this virginal character played by Patsy Kensit, Eugenia, seems to, you know, have an enormous appetite for sex. And that obviously becomes part of the story as the film progresses.
Her bedroom, too, looks like some kind of I'm not sure, some kind of a lair. I mean, it's an interestingly...
Yes, it's a kind of spider's web, isn't it, really? You know, it's a film about entrapment, and the bedroom is a sort of metaphor for that. Also, you know, it's a film, you know, in which the sexuality is equally explicit with men and women. You know, you generally, you know, in films which are dealing with sex, you know, in a sophisticated, shall I say, artistic way, you know, the director has no problem with sort of revealing all of the woman, and the man is sort of, you know, viewed as a sort of just the, you know, upper torso. And in fact, you know, here, you know, everybody is shown with their trousers off, as it were.
Well, let me just ask you something, because this was a very graphic scene in the film where, again, without giving too much away, one of the men is shown with a slight erection, and it gave the film a kind of reality to it. And I don't know if that was something that you felt comfortable with, the actor felt comfortable with, or not.
I mean, I wouldn't say that it was planned, but... you know, the event occurred, and it made the scene more shocking. It's meant to be a very shocking scene, and you know, the actor was okay about it. And you know, we're not sort of advertising this is the first time in a sort, you know, in a nationally released art movie that this is seen, but you know, it probably is. And if I think it definitely enhances the story.
My guest is filmmaker Philip Haas. His new film is Angels and Insects. We'll be back after a short break. This is Fresh Air. My guest is film director Philip Haas, and his latest film is called Angels and Insects. I want to ask you about a couple of scenes where we see the naturalist William Adamson. He has married Eugenia Alabaster, lives at the Alabaster Estate, and there are several scenes where we see him walking down the hall, and coming towards him are a couple of female servants, a couple of maids, and as they pass, they turn themselves and face the wall. I didn't know if this was a common custom at that time or whether this was something that you invented, but it makes for an interesting, powerful interchange as these people pass in these darkened hallways.
I got the idea because in researching the period, I read that a particularly nasty lord fired any servant who dared to cross his path. So I felt that the servants in this house would have been terrified that if they had any contact with the gentry, you know, their position might be threatened, or they would be, you know, dismissed. So although William isn't quite of the gentry, they view him as, you know, he's now married to, you know, to Eugenia. So they just would not want to make eye contact with him. Similarly, since we are making this analogy between the worker ants and the servants, you can never really tell what the face of an ant looks like. So I didn't want you to be able to see the servants' faces, with the exception of the servant, you know, Amy, who becomes important in the story.
So, and in a sense, it's true. Their faces are kind of covered, and we see them. They're small, and they kind of flitter by.
Right. And in fact, in casting the servants, we cast all local people. I wanted them to be really of the place. And we were very specific in our advertisements of saying, looking for small, dark people to play this, you know, these parts in a film.
What's the challenge of working with insects, specifically in this film, butterflies, moths, ants? As a film director, who's in charge, the animals or you?
No, I would say the animals definitely were in charge. There's an old adage, never work on a film with children or animals. And, you know, animals generally is referred to as sort of barnyard animals. I now have to extend that to never work with insects. It was extremely difficult. I mean, each species presented a different challenge, you know, from the butterflies to the moths to the ants. I mean, for example, with the ants, we have a number of scenes in which... a colony of red slave-making ants attack a colony of your sort of normal black ants. Unfortunately, where we were shooting the film in Warwickshire in England, the red slave-making ants don't exist. So we actually had to transport a log from southern England full of a red slave-making colony up at the dead of night, so that when they woke up in the morning, they wouldn't know they had moved. We had a position in the exact same position to the sun as they were in the south of England. And they quickly adapted to their new locale. But after a couple of days, a vicious woodpecker started attacking them. So they decamped. So we had to then try and gather up the ones that had decamped and then bring another log in. So that was just one challenge. With the butterflies, it became a question of how many butterflies would one have to release to create a cloud of butterflies. And then when we figured out that it would be in the thousands, to actually get, you know, 4,000 butterflies became an enormous task. We ended up renting them from the Stratford-upon-Avon butterfly farm.
How do you do that?
Well, you go and speak to the owner and say, look, we will rent them at 50 cents a butterfly and return them to you. And we found that the butterflies really flew well for only one launch. So it meant figuring out a system of transporting them the 45 miles from the butterfly farm to the estate, then releasing them, collecting them, and sending them back to Stratford so they could replenish themselves. And basically we had a whole kind of carpool system of always having, you know, several thousand butterflies at hand, and then recirculating them after they had rested and fed. With the moths, it just was very hard to get them to actually attack the actress. We finally sort of did it by a combination of positioning them, throwing them at her. But Patsy Kensit, who plays the actress at once sort of attracted to the butterflies and repelled by the moths, was a wonderful sport, particularly since she hated the moths. They're awful, the ones we use, these hawk moths. I mean, awful in the sense that they're rather menacing looking and sort of dropped on her unexpectedly and made terrible noises. So she didn't have a whole lot of acting that was necessary. I mean, she found it very repellent and showed that enormously and easily. And I think the scene, you know, works splendidly because of that.
Yeah, and what we see are the moths really climbing up her dress, and she's terrified, of course. In the scene where the butterflies are launched as a sort of a great seduction, what were the specifics of launching those butterflies? What specifically did you have to do to get them to do what you wanted on film?
Well, one, it needed to look like they were encircling her and not just being dumped on her. So it was a question of positioning them with relationship to the camera and to Patsy. And we launched them with 10 people with butterfly nets out of camera sight, releasing them in the directions that we determined would give a feeling of them flying around her in a way that was natural and not looking like we're just shooting butterflies out of a cannon.
And that then created the kind of swirly
yes.
look that we see. Did you work with entomologists, with bug wranglers, I mean, scientists who know how to at least try to make these insects do something?
Well, we had an entomologist from Oxford University who sort of advised us really on animal behavior. And then some of the second unit photography, that is the close-ups of the ant raids, basically with all the ant close-up photography was done by a couple of BBC documentary filmmakers. Mm-hmm. But by and large, the staging, you know, the first unit, that is myself and Belinda, who edited the film, my wife, in addition to writing it with me, we sort of staged and figured out how to deal with the insects. What is interesting from an entomological point of view is when the film was finished, we sent a cassette to E.O. Wilson, the Harvard professor who's probably the world's foremost authority on ants.
Absolutely.
And sociobiology.
Yeah.
And he loved the film and said he particularly admired its sweet menace and at the same time found it very compelling because it was entomologically accurate. So we got the certification from Professor Wilson.
You must be pleased.
Yes, I mean, you know, it would have been terrible to sort of done it and then pointed out that it was wrong.
You began your film career by making documentaries. What got you interested in films in the first place?
I wasn't a sort of cineast like a director, say, such as Tarantino, who's probably seen every film ever made. You mm-hmm. know, I went to the movies like most people go to the movies, but I was very much interested in the theater. And at university, I was a theater director and worked in the theater after leaving university for a couple of years. So I think the story element of films, the narrative, the dramatic side of things always interested me. And then I had met some artists socially in England and became intrigued with the idea of doing documentary films with them. And out of that, I spent 10 years making documentary films, always with artists. Interesting people like David Hockney and Gilbert and George, to Australian Aboriginal artists. But in my own mind, I always viewed myself not as a documentary filmmaker, but as a filmmaker, somebody telling a story. In these instances, you know, a story about a visual person making a work of art. So I kind of view both the documentary work and the feature work as a whole, as all a part of the work that I've been doing these past dozen years.
So what's the next feature film you're working on?
It's a film called Exquisite Corpse. It's set in London and Paris in the 30s. Very dark comedy about a vanishing lady and a young surrealist artist's obsessional search for her. So it's about a group of imaginary British surrealists. There are a few real surrealists in it, like Salvador Dali. And it will be a film that is visually very extreme.
Based on
a book by Robert Irwin, a very good English novelist. And we're going to shoot that this summer for 20th Century Fox.
Well, I thank you very much for joining us today on Fresh Air.
Well, I enjoyed speaking with you enormously.
Director Philip Haas's new film is Angels and Insects. I'm Marty Moss-Cohen, and this is Fresh Air.